Welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast, where this week...
Hold on, is this right? What it says here? Is that what you want me to say? And is it true?
Okay.
Welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast, where this week the boys actually get stuck into doing some proper writing.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Davey.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, everyone.
I think this is the earliest official recording of the Failing Writers Podcast that we've ever done.
Apart from those little diaries we kept about the 100-word microfiction thing where, where me and John were up at like 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was.
Half five, I believe.
Yeah. Still for me.
Yeah, definitely for you, because you didn't actually bother looking at it for half a day.
The word "bot," it's not... I didn't bother. I just didn't.
Wouldn't.
Yeah. But anyway, we're here now.
Yeah.
But why are we here, Tom? Please answer that question.
Oh, Dave, that's the eternal question, isn't it? Oh, you mean just for this specific...
Well, for now, let's stick to why today,
Well, this is our first step on our journey toward writing an award... I can't even speak. It's too early. This is ridiculous.
It is.
An award-winning sitcom, isn't it? This is our first group get. This is our first joint writing project. We're all three of us. This could be our last joint writing project, isn't it?
Yeah, it could be, couldn't
it? Let's try and keep it a little bit positive.
What are your honest thoughts going into it, though, guys, in terms of how it's going to work and if it will work?
I'm a little trepidatious.
In terms of us writing as a triumvirate.
Yeah, I find it's difficult, I think, because I don't know. I sort of have to think about things quite a lot before I know whether it's any good. So I find it quite difficult when we're sort of giving ideas together to sort of be able to give any sort of judgment straight away. Is that any good? Should we do that?
Oh, don't worry, Dave. I'll step into that. I have very instant gut very strong gut reactions.
Yeah, we've got someone in the group who will let us know straight away.
And I might be right, might be wrong, but I will have a strong opinion very early.
I feel the same, Dave. It takes me a little while just to mull stuff over. Do you find as well that because we said to each other, let's come with a few ideas to this session today. But one of the problems with that, of course, is that you get quite attached to your ideas sometimes. And then and then you release them into the group. And if they don't all sort of come together, it's quite a tricky thing, isn't it?
Well, that's exactly. Because I spent quite a bit of time working out certain things and how they would fit together. Mm. And then I'm going, but if someone else has got an idea.
Yeah, we're going to have to dismantle that now.
Yeah, I have to pull that completely apart. And, God.
But I think it's good to come with something, isn't it? And then
definitely.
I think that is the idea. Because I think I imagine we've got quite different ideas about the feel of it as well. So that's going to be quite interesting. What kind of sitcom is it, you know? I don't know.
We imagine those great bits where there's actually something that we just say and everyone goes, oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yep.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
That would be lovely.
And then we go, oh, well, we can't do that then. That must be too obvious. that must be just too... Yeah,
too easy. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Because I do want it to be as good as possible. So I do think we need to sort of push every little detail.
Yeah.
But that is going
to
be tricky.
Do you know what I thought as well, doing the sort of the notes and the ideas to bring to this? I think part of it is going to be getting ourselves together to work on it together as well, because I found it really hard doing the notes of thinking, well, I don't know what's in the other guy's mind.
Yeah.
I don't know what building blocks, because I'm very much a builder on as well.
Yeah.
Of like, someone else's idea and put the funny line at the end or do the extra bit and I kind of felt like I was just walking on thin air in places.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be really important to get the three brains onto stuff.
Yeah.
And get used to doing that as a dynamic sort of three rather than...
Yeah.
Going off to our own silos. Yeah.
I think so. I think as long as we all talk about it together, share all ideas, and then at the end of the day, do what I want to do, it'll be fine.
Yeah. Taking a back seat with writing is difficult because we're not used to it as well. That's the other thing.
So can we... I know this is asking for trouble with Dave and his lack of ability of understanding numerical scoring systems.
Oh, don't put a score going into a rating system.
We're going to go into it now. We're going to do a good solid 3 hours of writing together. How are we feeling on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of positivity going into it?
I feel...
I think everyone... Yeah, no, you've answered... In many ways, you've answered the question.
Dave's gone to get his calculator.
So I would give it a strong 7.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a lot lower than me.
Well, I think six.
I've gone in at 9.5.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's very positive. That's very positive.
We're okay at what we do.
Yeah.
I know we've never done this before specifically, but we're not bad. I'm excited. I'm not saying the resulting script will be a 9.5. I'm just saying
your level of positivity.
I'll probably put myself in an 8 in the middle of you guys somewhere there then, and we'll see. We'll ask the same question when we return after this short break. So, dear listener, you'll be pleased to know you don't have to undergo the pain of 2 or 3 hours of us going around in circles, having minor arguments, and coming out with nothing. We'll just skip ahead.
I mean, maybe if we're having a massive row, we should hit record.
Yeah, we should, yeah.
Because I think that would be interesting.
I think if we just leave it and cut back to us saying, right, goodbye from the last ever episode of the Fane and Writers podcast. That's it. We're done.
Where's everybody gone? Maybe now between this intro bit and us coming back on, we should have some kind of montage.
Oh, yeah, all the best bits of the show.
Like dreamy Hollywood music.
That's nice.
Do it.
We'll do a cheesy montage.
Great.
Right, let's get cracking.
See you after that then.
Cheesy montage.
Right, let's get writing, boys.
Okay, I've got a great idea to start with, right? What if we take a story as...
Wowzers. Hey, that's another great idea we've just come up with, boys.
You guys, I mean, we are so talented.
We really are.
I almost feel guilty. Oh, we're brilliant.
We're incredible.
Okay, that's amazing. Let's build on that
together.
We're so tuned into each other.
we've done it again.
Oh.
Key change.
You guys are amazing.
Yeah, we're working together really well.
It's like a dream.
Oh, yeah.
And I just don't want to wake up.
That's going to make it into the cheesy montage.
It certainly is.
Ideas.
Oh, I've got another idea.
I bet it's brilliant.
Yeah, I bet it's the bestest idea ever since...
Sliced bread?
Bread.
Yeah, it didn't really work, that one.
Yeah, I don't see where you're going with it at all.
Well, you think of something better then. Can you?
Yeah, of course I can.
Go on then.
I'm thinking.
Well, think quicker.
I can't when everyone's bloody shouting at me, can
I? This is ridiculous. I can't work with people like you.
What do you mean, people like us?
Probably means people who always think they know best all the time.
Yeah, but I do know best. If you two actually listened to me, you'd know that.
Oh, would we now?
Yes, you would. Right, how long have we got left of our 3-hour session?
About 2 hours 45 minutes.
Bloody hell.
Right.
Montage.
Well, you'll be pleased to know that we have all survived our first proper lengthy writing session.
Yeah, barely survived.
There wasn't a crossword, was there?
No,
we all
that's
kind
true.
Of we were pulling in roughly the same direction.
Yeah.
It didn't turn into any kind of tug of war. Yeah. I mean, we might not have pulled anything any distance.
No.
We might have realised the thing we're pulling is far too heavy for us to actually move.
Yeah.
But we were pulling in the same direction.
It's true. And to call it a writing session, that's probably not entirely accurate.
It was a chat about characters, wasn't it, really?
It was trying to come up with a group of six characters that will give us the most potential for stories and funny.
It was like a groundwork session, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think we...
Foundations.
Yeah, and I think we did that. We achieved that. I think if we were building a summer house... The concrete flat area is in, isn't it? Ready to put. I don't do building, but if I did, I'd imagine that's how
I'm not
you
sure
do
we've
it. The base is there.
I'm not sure we put the concrete down. Do you know what I mean? I think we've dug the hole and we put maybe like a little bit of a little bit of gravel in there. Again, I'm not really a builder.
Well, that's better than usual, because at this point we would have put some gravel down and then tried to put the roof on before we've done any walls
exactly,
or anything.
Yeah.
So
I think more than anything, we've highlighted how we should... I mean, we're not doing very well at writing, but we certainly shouldn't go into business building summer houses or anything like that in people's gardens, because that would be just horrendous. But do you know what? I feel really good about it. I thought we've got some good stuff. I think we've got a good basis to crack on. And do you know what? I'm so excited about it. I think we should try and keep that energy and keep that momentum going into our next thing rather than letting it slide.
That felt like one of the moments that seems really unrealistic in musicals where everyone bursts into song. But for once, there was a point there where I thought we were just going to burst into song and somehow know the song to sing like they do in musicals.
Yeah.
we've been working out together, the basis of our story, and all that kind of business. And doing, yeah, and everyone just knows, and then other people, people passing by, join, yeah, in with the dancing and, yeah, everything. Yeah.
Same moves.
It didn't happen, but I think I got that vibe.
Yeah, I was feeling that.
I think we're getting the impression that we're excited. And we should use this.
I feel like we're on a
excitement.
Roll.
Yeah.
You see? 9.5. What did I tell you?
9.5.
I think you might have been right, John. Yeah. It's at least a 9.
So what should we do with this excitement? Yeah.
Well, I think at this stage, before we really get into the sort of nitty-gritty of the story, it might be a good idea to bring in an expert in the field of comic writing.
Ooh.
Sitcoms and stuff. How about
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Yes.
Right. Yeah, so, Tom, is there any chance you could, like, use the power of sonic wizardry to maybe conjure someone from thin air to come and talk to us? Think you could do that?
Yeah. Just if Dave, you see that big red button that's just appeared next to you?
The one that says "Don't touch under any circumstances."
No. The one next to that. Don't press that.
The one next to the one. Right. They're very close. Those two red buttons are very close together and very similar in appearance, aren't they?
It is bad design, isn't it?
You want me to press it?
Yeah. Press it.
There we go.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
It actually worked. Yeah, I was just sort of joking about that, but that is pretty cool. Well done. Do you know, thank goodness I kept and cherished the little notebook that I wrote in when I attended a workshop run by Emma Kennedy a few years ago, because she very sweetly gave us all her email address and she said, if you need anything, drop me a line. And so I wrote it down in that little notebook. And when I contacted her a few weeks ago, she was as good as her word. And she agreed to join us on the podcast. And here she is.
Oh, here I am.
Hi, Emma.
Hello, I am.
Ridiculous level of honesty and commitment, that, Emma.
I know.
Because I would have given out fake email addresses. I think that's lovely that you didn't.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that, Emma. I was thinking, what did you get out of that workshop? It was such a lovely thing to do. Because it definitely wasn't for the money, right?
No,
because there weren't enough people there.
No, it was definitely not for the money. I mean,
it wasn't for any publicity.
I was there anyway, I think,
right.
Doing something. I think I was talking. Oh, that's right. Yes, I was doing an event with Janet Ellis.
Oh, right.
Talking about our books, but I can't remember what the topic was because we weren't specifically talking about our books, but I think it was about mothers and daughter relationships in books. I think that's what it was.
Right.
So I just happened to be there.
I see.
And they just asked me if I would do a workshop. And I said, yeah, of course I will.
Oh.
I'm always really happy to help people who are starting out, because I think writing is one of those things that everybody thinks they can do. And some people can.
Stop the interview, lads. With me, that she got us. She's uncovered us.
And some people can write, but they haven't got the map. It's sort of like getting into a car and you've decided that you're going to go to a small, obscure island that's somewhere off the Scottish Highlands, but you haven't got any clue how to get there. You just sort of know it exists, but you haven't. You don't know which roads to take to get there.
Yeah.
And storytelling, or at least successful storytelling, every single successful film or book or sketch show or sitcom you have ever seen just so happens to follow the exact same rules as all the other successful films and sitcoms and books that you have ever read or seen. And it boils down to a very simple formula, which is, every story has to have a hero, and that hero can be anything or anyone. So it doesn't even have to be a person. It could be an object.
Yeah.
And that thing or person has to have a desire that is unfulfilled, a dream that they have always dreamt about but have never managed to achieve. And then something sets them off on a journey in order to try and find that thing, but there has to be something that is stopping them getting it. And that's either a person or it's an internal flaw. And there it is.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's very much the formula of this podcast, isn't it? We all have a dream of being successful, but we've never been able to.
And I've got the internal flaw.
There we go. Yeah. We just needed a map all along.
Well, we probably learnt more in that 5 minutes than we've learnt reading a few, like, how to write books. So that's good. It's a good start.
But it's also, do you know what? It boils down to, if you have an idea, if you think you've got a really good idea for anything, for a book or a film or a sitcom or whatever. If you can't tell someone who has no idea about your idea, if you can't tell them it in one sentence, then it doesn't work.
Yeah. We need to work on this sentence, chaps. Well,
we did some log line. We did a bit about log lines last series, and it was Dave, wasn't it? Dave, you couldn't do your log line. You realised when he came to it, like a horse coming up to a jump in the Grand National. You kind of were galloping along, and then kind of got to the fence and reared up on your hind legs.
It's true. I learnt more in trying to write that one sentence than I had done in years of trying to write that book. So it's a very good exercise.
Yeah, it is, and it's often it requires you to be really honest with yourself.
Yeah.
About how good your idea actually.
I didn't
is.
Stop Dave. He still finished his book. So.
yeah, exactly. I just left the sentence and carried on with the book.
He finished it. I mean, it's terrible, but he did finish it.
Well, yeah.
But certainly for anything that's for the commercial market, if you can't tell your story in one sentence, then you haven't got there yet.
A lot of your writing, Emma, obviously, is based on your actual experiences.
Yes.
So how does that work? You're kind of creating your story from things that exist, but you're still using that pattern, I'm guessing. You're just fitting it into a situation.
Yes, I am. The tent, The Bucket and Me, which is sort of the best example of one of my non-fiction books, is about a family and their disastrous attempts to go on holiday in the 1970s. But it's really about a family who just wants to try and have one nice holiday. That's the sentence. It's a family who are trying to have a nice holiday.
Everything's getting
and
in
they
the way.
Fail.
Yeah.
And they fail again and again and again and again and again. And what do they understand at the end of it? Which is that they thought that what they wanted was a nice holiday, but what they needed was each other.
Yeah.
It's also a very relatable sentence, isn't it?
Yeah.
Families just trying to have a decent holiday.
Yeah.
I very much relate to that.
Yeah. That is a great book, by the way.
Thank you. But again, can you see how I was able to tell you that in one sentence?
Yeah,
absolutely. It has a very high snort factor, that book. You know, when you're reading a book in a public place and you let out a little snort unexpectedly.
I get asked every single time whenever anyone talks to me about it. They ask me if I made anything up, and I always reply, I wish I had. But it was
so
true.
Have you naturally been able to write stories then, before you understood the framework of them, if you like? Is it a natural talent you have?
I think I was always a natural storyteller. Yeah. I was somebody who, if anything terrible happened, I would secretly love it, because you think, oh, this is going to make a good story to tell people. I could spin a yarn, and I was good at that, and I was funny. I knew I was funny, but when I started out, I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
I didn't have the first clue what I was doing, and I think this is part and parcel why I like doing the workshops that you were at. Mm. Is that if I had gone to a workshop like that when I was 27, I probably would have bypassed 10 years of my career in terms of I would have known what I was doing quicker.
Yeah, I think I did that when I was 43, so unfortunately.
But it is amazing to me, sort of, what once you know the shape of every single story, then it just enables you to ask yourself all the right questions right at the very beginning when you're making your choices. Mm. Like, who is your hero? What is wrong with him or her? What is holding that person back? What do they want?
Mm.
But what do they need? And those two things are very different.
Yeah.
Do you find it ever ruins stories, Emma, for you? I'm guessing not. You know, because you're kind of aware of the system being worked upon you.
Well, it's I mean, I can when I'm watching films in particular, it really does annoy me if it's not immediately apparent within sort of the first 5 minutes what our hero wants.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I really, I think that is a basic requirement of any good gripping story. You've got to know what the stakes are immediately.
Yeah.
And then you're off. Whereas, you know. I mean, I'm not against really long, slow moving things. Like, I'm a great fan of those. I don't know if you've ever watched them. They in real time, really long journeys. Have you ever seen them? There's one that's just hypnotic, which is just of someone in a sleigh and he's just going across sort of Icelandic tundra for 24 hours.
Yeah.
And you can't, you start watching it, you can't go to bed. I once watched a train journey literally all the way across Australia, and it's just in real time, and you just think, well, this is just lovely. But, you know, strictly speaking, it's not a story with a structure, except it is, because it's got a beginning and a middle and an end.
Yeah, I do know some people who tell stories like that.
It feels like you're going across the entire continent of Australia.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. I used to say about one person that listening to them tell a story was like watching an episode of 24 where events happen in real time. So it's like, you know, something that took an hour to happen would take an hour for them to relate back to you. But yeah.
Are you talking about me, Dave?
I couldn't possibly put a name on it, John.
But am I right in thinking that you have a sitcom idea that you've got rattling around?
Well, idea is a very strong word, Emma, but that is the aim of this season of the podcast, is that we are putting our heads together to write a sitcom and pitch it to someone. Yeah, so
can I ask, yes, why have you chosen the sitcom as your structure?
Well, part of it is because we unearthed, after a lot of trying to find out like anyone that we could possibly speak to for this podcast, that John happens to be very good friends with someone who's a commissioning editor for a TV channel.
Yeah.
So it seemed like a good thing to put together. But something I in particular have always been interested in, and between the three of us at different times, we've all tried to write sitcoms with, you know, varying degrees of failure, but we've never done anything together.
Yeah. Okay. And would you just be writing this, or would one of you or more of you be in it? Because I know you do voiceovers. So
yeah, I don't think we haven't really discussed that, have we? Weirdly.
We're desperately trying not to put the cart, I was going to say before the horse, but that still sounds too close to each other. Yeah.
Okay. Well, before you sort of go down the sitcom route, and I know that it's very... The fact that one of you is very good friends with the commissioning editor is obviously a delicious carrot that is dangling in front of you. I would say to you that the first thing you need to do is just look at how many slots there are currently for sitcoms on British television and how many actually get away each year and which ones are getting away. And then ask yourself, okay, what do we think realistically our chances are of getting one of those slots? So if you say to me, okay, well, what do you think is getting away? Well, number one, there are only currently two studio sitcoms being made in the UK. Two.
Wow.
And one of them is Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Yep.
And the other one is Not Going Out. And that's... It.
Sounds like a gap in the market. Is that what you're saying? And there's a big gap in the market. Oh yeah.
Well, I'm just saying. What I'm saying is nobody is buying studio sitcoms anymore. So sort of forget about that. Number two, and also, I don't think you would get a studio sitcom away unless you were a very famous writer performer. So like Peter Kay, if he wanted to do a studio sitcom, he might be able to get one away. If Ricky Gervais wanted to do a studio sitcom, he might get one away. But I think if you're not any of those things, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not realistic.
Yeah.
Especially for first time writers.
Yeah.
So the next thing to think about is, okay, well, what other sitcoms are getting away? And if you look at those, again, it's writer performers who are getting their sitcoms away. So like Daisy May Cooper, people like that, Stath Let's Flats, that sort of thing, Alma's Not Normal, you know, you can see already there is a pattern that it is people who have, they are all writer performers who are getting it away. Okay, so then you ask yourself, well, okay, what realistically are the chances of us getting this into development? Well, you might get something into development, but then going from development into actual production is really quite slim. Mm. And so what I would say to you as first-time writers is you might want to think about Radio 4, especially as... writers who aren't necessarily performers, but also given that you're all voiceover artists, it might work to your advantage if you're pitching for a Radio 4 sitcom, there's more slots there as well. And they are far more open to people who haven't written before.
Yeah, do you know what? That's actually quite a good idea, isn't it?
And it's a really, really good training ground for writers who want to do comedy, because you have to concentrate on the written word and not rely on your performers.
This is good, Emma.
This is good, isn't it?
This is like shattering our dreams, but at the same time, bringing the reality back in.
Well, wait, because the other thing I want to say to you is, have you thought about comedy drama? Because there are far more slots for comedy dramas, and comedy dramas run and run and run and run and run and run if you get it right. If you just get that nice, warm, lovely tone, there's no end to how long a comedy drama can go for. Whereas sitcoms, you'll be lucky if you get more than one go, and a lot of sitcoms will only get two goes.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is it? Why do you think that is? Because we had this conversation, didn't we, about comedy drama or sitcom?
Yeah.
Because people don't watch comedies. People don't watch sitcoms as much as they used to. They just don't. And people are far more willing to watch a comedy drama and find it hilarious than watch a comedy and think, what on earth is this? This isn't funny. They're far more critical of comedy.
It's interesting, is that it does seem like it seems like a sort of old-fashioned idea, doesn't it, the sitcom?
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you go to the theatre, it never fails to astonish me how minimal the hilarity has to be in a theatre script for people in the audience to find it the funniest thing they've ever heard.
Because it's expectation?
Quite possibly. Yes, it's expectations. Yeah, yeah. If you go and see a drama and there's an occasional funny line in it, people are killing themselves.
It's like those annoying people that really like Shakespeare, isn't it? And laugh at the funny bits in Shakespeare.
Yes.
And you're like, come on. That wasn't funny 400 years ago when he did it. Why are you doing? Why are you laughing?
Yeah, and they all know. And they all know the joke.
Again, you talk about me.
And they all know the joke is coming.
Yes, then the really annoying ones laugh a little bit louder just before the joke's delivered.
Or deliver the actual joke.
I understand this. I understand this.
So, I think for people like you, the most important thing is just to think, okay, how do we get our foot in the door?
Yeah.
How do we start?
Yeah,
and I think a really good place to start is at Radio 4 doing sketches. If you want to just go down the comedy route, that is the way to do it, because they will accept scripts from people who haven't got agents. Mm. They will accept scripts that haven't been sent to them via this and via that official route. You just submit some sketches, and if they get picked, then they get picked. But it's a really good way of getting to know Radio 4 producers. It's a really good way of getting to know your peers, your writing peers. And it's about networking and creating, you know, your own comedy writing community.
It's very good advice. I think we have been thinking about the podcast probably more than actually thinking about trying to get jobs as writers. Do you think that's true, fellas?
Yeah, I think that was part of this is about the sort of process, isn't it, of putting a pitch together and just sort of seeing if we could do it. I think we have quite realistic expectations when it comes to our chances of actual success or commissioning. Yeah. But
it's gonna be two or three series max. I would say.
Do you know what your idea is yet?
We do. Yeah, we should.
We do.
We should run it past you, shouldn't we?
Well, pitch it to me, please.
John, sum it up in a single sentence.
I don't know. Yeah. Logline. We haven't done a logline.
Okay, right.
Have we?
Okay. I am. All right. You're right. The three of you have come in. Knock, knock, knock. Yes. Hello, boys. Come in. Please sit down. I understand you have a sitcom to pitch me. Please.
Yeah, we did, but someone's just shattered all our dreams and we don't really know what we're doing now. We feel very vulnerable.
Come on, let's hear it.
Okay.
Come on, John, okay, you're nominated spokesperson. Did we agree that, Dave? I think we did, didn't we?
I think we did. I think we just have.
Yeah. I almost certainly can't do a log line for it, which I think probably tells you we could We could probably put something together, couldn't we?
This is ridiculous. You just need to tell me what your sitcom is about.
Hey, come on, John.
Okay, that's all I want. It's called... Just tell me what your sitcom is about, please.
Okay, it's called Poker Night, and it's about, you guessed it, it's a poker night. There are six players. It's five men, one woman at the moment, because we haven't got very far with this. And they're all from very different walks of life. And...
But what I would say is, so is the idea then that because that immediately says to me that it's going to be the same episode or the same setup each week, that it is them arriving for poker games. So like Friday night dinner, yes?
Well, the original stick was, it was like Friday night dinner, but about a poker night. But the sort of slight difference is, and it doesn't fall into a traditional sitcom setup in this way. So I like the idea of a comedy drama because the idea is that each episode or each week we would be at a different person's house. So their sort of house or their flat or their caravan or whatever they live in almost becomes like a character in itself.
Right.
And it's all about the sort of relationships between those different people. And it's kind of like they're using this night where they get together as like a therapy session.
Okay, let me stop you there. Sitcoms have to have one hero who has a fatal flaw who never learns. So in terms of, I like the idea of it's going to a different house each week, but your hero has to stay the same. Does that make sense?
It does.
So you can't, if you're shifting narrative to be about the person whose house you're at, that's not a sitcom. That's a comedy drama.
Yes, which is why I thought your idea about making it a comedy drama was particularly insightful.
Yeah, we haven't nailed that character and their want and need, have we? we have talked about.
Yeah. It did come up in our writing discussion the other day about the leading edge of it, if you like. Because I think I said something a little bit similar to Emma, but that's fine.
You did, Tom, didn't you? You did talk about whether it needed to have like one person that we followed as the main sort of character.
I'm just looking up what Patrick Marber's thing was called
because if we can copy that, that'd be brilliant.
you should watch it.
Yeah,
Patrick Marber Poker Play.
Dealer's Choice.
Dealer's Choice. Dealer's Choice.
Only got 4 out of 5 stars on The Guardian, so we can probably get 5, I would imagine. Yeah, 2 minutes room for.
if we get the other one.
So yeah. you should look that up and read it, etc., etc. But I presume if you still want to go down the sitcom route, that really, I think my advice would be that you have to keep it in the same house each week. But obviously, each week's problem is about a different person who's come. So that then you've still got your central character. Your central character is the one who's driving the action. The central character is the one who's got the problem. Each episode has to start with a problem that he has to solve. And he's not going to solve because it's a sitcom.
Yeah, it's
interesting, isn't it? Because we had was it only yesterday we had our sort of discussion about it, that a lot of what we talked about doesn't fall into a sort of sitcom structure in any way.
I mean, I think you've got something there. I think you just need to work out whether you're going down sitcom route or you're going comedy drama route. In which case, if it's comedy drama, then you can switch up your episode's hero. That can be a different one each week. And then with like, you know, your group of characters are all there, but you can shift the emphasis each week. But with a sitcom, you can't do that.
Mm. And they're allowed to, presumably, they're kind of allowed to change as well.
In a comedy drama, characters are allowed to learn. But in sitcoms, characters must never change. And they never...
They kind of need to reset to zero, don't they, after every episode.
And they never, ever, ever learn from their mistakes. Ever. Mm. And that's why it's funny. Because the fatal flaw of a main sitcom character, hero, is the absolutely fundamental thing that drives the comedy in any given sitcom episode.
Yeah.
So do you think we still Would you still have a kind of main character? Would you still have a main character? Do you think that would work, still work well with a comedy drama?
The thing is, things that are the most successful have the audience rooting for one person. You know, 'twas ever thus. If your emotional center is one person, then you are going to have a more successful program on your hands, because audiences like to root for someone. They like to invest in someone. They have to care what happens to them. So if you want to make your lives easier...
We're all for that.
You concentrate on your main character and the journey of your main character.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I think that's... Yeah, that's sort of what... It's kind of what we had in mind, isn't it?
All we kind of had so far was our sort of cast of characters and the sort of bigger stories that they go through, rather than any sort of, you know, we didn't get around to any sort of like story of the week, that kind of thing. It's all a kind of bigger story. And it really does fit more into the comedy drama sort of arc that you described.
Yeah.
Just then.
Also, yeah. And I'm very comfortable saying this out loud, comedy drama is much easier to write than sitcoms.
And why is that? Because you don't need the same sort of amount of gags.
The level of technical expertise that is required for sitcoms is really difficult. They are really, really hard to write, and proper, really clever, good ones. Mm. They are intricate puzzles, whereas comedy dramas, you don't have to do that. It's a different kettle of fish. It's you are telling a story that has a journey, whereas in sitcoms, yes, you are telling a story, but it has to have four strands and there has to be a payoff that you've set a seed for at the beginning, and every single line has to be an absolute cracker. Every single line.
Yeah.
Let's do a comedy drama then, shall we, chaps?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of glad, because I think I was definitely fighting for that.
Oh, yeah, you say that now. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think Tom said that all along, didn't he? Yeah, of course he did. Yeah.
When you were turning your life into a sitcom, Emma, how did you find that process?
I think, looking back, I enjoyed it, but I had to make a lot of compromises and make a lot of changes, because obviously the book is 10 holidays, and I couldn't do that. You can't do that in a sitcom. And they were insistent that it was a sitcom rather than a comedy drama. If it had been a comedy drama, I would have just done the book sequentially. But it had to be a sitcom, and it had to be set on an estate. And it had to be about their life on the estate and the characters that they interact with on the estate. So that's immediately a very different thing from the Tent, the Bucket and Me. So essentially what I was doing was I was taking the, for want of a better word, the characters from Tent, the Bucket and Me and putting them into a domestic setting that was more sitcom friendly. So there were big compromises that had to be made.
Yeah.
How did that feel then? Because, you know, you're talking about compromises, but there's compromises of like real life.
Well, it's interesting, because my favourite chapters in The Tent, the Bucket and Me are the French holidays, without a doubt. I think they are the funniest ones. And I always knew that we would not be able to do those. And I sort of didn't mind about that, because I still to this day think that there is a film to be made of a family who are just trying to get to the south of France, a little bit like
National Lampoon's
Little Miss Sunshine. Because that was my mother's great big thing, was she just wanted to go to Cannes, which she never did. And you can see already that is the seed of a film, of a family in the 70s whose mother has just decided, and they're from a working class estate, they've got no reasonable expectation of ever going to Cannes, and she just decides, no, we are going to go to Cannes. Yeah. And then the film is about them trying to get there.
Yeah.
And in that instance, if I did write that film, I would then use the chapters, or the French chapters from that book.
Yeah.
Can you remember what the catalyst was for that book's explosion? Because it was a real runaway success?
Oh, well,
wasn't
I mean,
it?
No, I don't know. I was astonished. The book came about because I was sitting one Sunday lunchtime with my mum and dad, and we just started remembering all our disastrous holidays, and we were absolutely crying laughing.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that week, an editor got in contact with me and said, oh, have you got any ideas for books? And I just, off the cuff, I just said, well, I could write a non-fiction one about our disastrous attempts to go on holiday in the 1970s. I literally just said it like that.
Yeah.
And he went, oh my God, that sounds amazing. Yes, I'll buy that, please. And I just thought, what? It can't be this easy. What are you talking about? And I went away and wrote it. And the writing of that book was an enormously precious thing to me, because I went home every single Sunday and interviewed my mum and dad. And my dad had an incredible capacity to remember facts and, you know, small minutiae. And my mother had an incredible capacity for remembering every single argument she'd ever had word for word. And it was sort of amazing, because I would just be sitting there watching them, and they would just start reenacting arguments that they had had with various people while they were on holiday. But so anyway, so that was lovely. Yeah. And when it was published, I didn't have any expectations for it whatsoever, but I got the bit of luck that I got was that it was chosen for Book of the Week on Radio 4. And right. I think that's thing that kicked it off.
Yeah, so obviously your mum, Brenda, features very heavily in that book. And when I emailed recently, you mentioned you were doing the voiceover for your latest book.
Yes.
Which is Letters from Brenda.
From Brenda, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a fascinating and also extremely personal book.
It's the most personal book I've ever written. And I think it's the best thing I've ever written. And I really do mean that. And I never say things like that. So it's like, that is a very weighty statement for me to make. And I had a very difficult relationship with my mum, because I think that for all of the time I knew her, she had an undiagnosed mental illness, and she was very unpredictable, and she was brilliant, and she was the most charismatic person I've ever known. She was the most extraordinary person I've ever known, but she was also an absolute monster.
Right.
And she was either good Brenda, who was the greatest person you would ever want to spend time with, or she was terrible Brenda, who you were absolutely terrified of. And so much of my childhood was sort of spent just trying to navigate between whether today was good Brenda or bad Brenda. Mm. And when you're a child and you don't really understand what is going on, I mean, and also the secrecy that surrounded it as well, I didn't have any sense that anybody else was going through what we were going through at home. Absolutely none. And you certainly wouldn't even occurred to me to have spoken to anybody about it. So there's that.
Yeah.
Then sort of as I got older, I had a sort of real love-hate relationship with her, because I really loved her passionately, but I also hated how she made me feel at various times. So we had this very complicated relationship. And then when she died, I experienced all that mix of things of obviously grief that took a very long time to process, but also relief that she was gone, and guilt, because I felt relieved that she was gone. So again, it was these terrible sort of, I felt like I had a weight on me. But the worst thing about when she died was that I was just left with all the bad bits, it felt like. And I had forgotten the good bits. And 3 years after she died, my dad sold the family home, the home that is written about in the 10th book at me. And I thought I would feel absolutely devastated by that. But it turned out I wasn't. It was that in and of itself was really interesting. But the new owners called him about a month after they'd moved in and said that they'd found two suitcases in the loft, and they were full of letters addressed to me. And right. in those suitcases were 75 letters written by my mother to me.
So unsent.
Some of them were unsent. I had seen some of them before, but not all of them. And that's the interesting thing, is that the ones I had seen before, she'd obviously found and taken back.
Yeah.
So that in and of itself was fascinating. But they stretched back to, you know, when I was a teenager, from when I was a teenager. And so I got them and I just sat down and I read every single one of them, and they were just absolutely hilarious. Like properly, properly funny. But there were also, you know, some that have slight suggestions of the madness that set in, certainly in her later life. But the big thing for me was I just wanted to find out once and for all what was wrong with her, because we never knew.
Yeah.
And so the book is about the letters, and between each chapter I've put one of her letters, the best ones I've picked out. But it's the story of my mother. It's me starting from her birth and going through to her death, and me trying to work out once and for all what is wrong with her. And I do, I do find out.
Right.
I won't tell you what was wrong with her, but I do find out.
Yeah, save that for the sales.
Yeah.
Do you get the feeling that the letters were designed?
I don't
know.
I think my mum wanted to be a writer, right. and I think she could have been a writer, and she would have been a very good one. And there were lots of things that my mother could have been, but for reasons that I get that will be fully explained in the book, there's lots of reasons why she didn't fulfil her potential. But I think that's quite common of that generation, that, you know, if you were from a dirt poor background, and she really was absolutely dirt poor, you especially if you were a girl,
yeah, there just weren't
then
opportunities. Yeah,
you
yeah,
didn't
yeah,
have yeah. a future. You certainly couldn't dream of having anything that was you could call a career or anything like that, and certainly not be able to do anything creative. So it was just off the cards for her. You know, I think she could have been an actress and a writer. I think she could have been someone who was incredibly successful in either of those fields. But she is a very accomplished storyteller, and she's really funny, really, really funny. There's one letter in the book about a trip to Prague that I gave to my wife to read, and she was actually lying on the floor crying with laughter because she couldn't actually believe how funny it was. But it was, you know, you will know that if you've read The Tenth Bucket and Me, she's really funny in it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's her. That I didn't make that up. That's her. That is her.
Wow. Well, yeah, sounds great. So I suppose we could do a plug, couldn't we? And say that's out on May the 12th.
Yes. Letters from Brenda. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Look forward to that. Yeah. There's one other thing about your sort of writing career, because we did an interview with Jeremy Dyson recently, and amongst lots of things that he's done, he worked as a script editor on things.
Yeah.
And you've worked as a script editor as well.
I'm script editing at the moment. Yes, I'm script editing something Sue Perkins is writing. Very interesting comedy drama that I think people will be quite surprised about.
Is there any cards involved in that comedy drama? Like
there's no cards.
Right, okay, right, good, yeah.
There's no cards.
So what does that entail then, like working as a script editor?
Okay, so I think a good script editor isn't somebody who comes in and just tells somebody what they want the script to be. The script editor is, I like to think of a writer as that they've got a great big block of wood, and you're giving them the tools to help them carve that wood in the best possible way that they want to carve it. But I think it's really important that writers should feel like they're not being given prescriptive instructions, but rather tools with which they can improve their storytelling.
Yeah. You're not trying to inhibit. Yeah. That'd be the worst.
So I will look particularly at the structure of a script and just make sure that, you know, in the first 5 minutes, you know what to expect. You know what the stakes are, and that your central character has a proper narrative arc within the episode. So that's what I concentrate on, is the structure.
Yeah, you're kind of checking the beats.
Yeah,
and they're coming
exactly,
to the right places,
exactly. Yeah. And then once that is in place, then you sort of go into the minutiae of, okay, this line could be a bit better. This line needs to be a bit more punchy. What is this scene doing? Because every scene has to justify its place.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. And if a scene isn't moving the story forward, then why is it there?
Is it hard to do that without, like, your own vision starting to form and do you know what I mean? Like, you start to get, oh, actually, it could work like this.
Actually, I think it is easier, actually, to just stand back and look at something, because you're looking at it with a dispassionate eye and you're not emotionally involved in it, which the writer is. The writer is emotionally involved in what they have produced. And I think that's why it's so difficult for writers to get rid of scenes, because they wrote that scene because they loved that scene. And your job is to go, okay, yes, that's a lovely scene, but it doesn't work in this place right here and now. Like, for instance, I mean, there's the particular scene in something that I'm script editing with another writer, which I won't say who, but there is a particular scene that is a brilliant scene. It is absolutely brilliant, and it's really funny, and it's energized, and it's great, but it has got no place in that script.
Yeah.
And every single time I've had that script, I've said, this is a great scene, but you're going to have to lose it, because it's a pre-title scene and you've already got a pre-title scene, and this one doesn't, you can't have a pre-title scene and then your titles and then another pre-title scene. You can't do that. And the writer will say, but I love that scene. It's so great and it's so brilliant. I go, yeah, it is, but you've got to get rid of it. It's still in the script.
Does it just keep coming because back in every draft? It's still there.
It keeps coming back. Yeah, because the writer is too emotionally attached to it.
Yeah.
But I can absolutely guarantee that when that script goes to commissioner will say that scene has to go.
Yeah.
I think we're all a bit like that, aren't we? We're like dogs with bones sometimes. I think
the important thing, the most important thing for a writer is to trust their script editor. And if you don't trust your script editor, then get another script editor.
Yeah.
And I really mean that, because you have, it's a very fine balance, because it's your job to tell the writer that things aren't working, and writers don't like to hear that because it means more work. We've all been there. You know, you think, right, this is finished. It's finished. I'm done. And it's never done. It's never done. Every single new person you send it to will come back with a set of notes.
Yeah.
And you just have to sort of, what's the best way of putting it? I suppose that it is to remove yourself from the emotional process almost, because it's a job.
Yeah.
And it's a work. And actually, even though you're the person writing it, a script is a collaborative process.
Yeah.
And it's not just, even though you are the person writing it, you are going to have to take on board the thoughts of your producer, your script editor, the director, the actors will also have things to say when you get to that point. So you're constantly changing it. You'll be changing your script until the director has said cut, and that's a wrap on that scene.
Yeah.
So you're never done.
Mm.
Is that particularly difficult when you're sort of editing for... Because I think I'm right in saying you've been quite good friends with Mel and Sue for some time. Is it particularly hard when you're editing for something that a friend has written? Or can you just be brutal with them?
The only difference is that I think friends are able... to tell you to fuck off. They don't mean it. They don't mean it, but you get more shit. You definitely get more shit when you're working with friends, because they don't have to be polite to you.
Yeah.
Mm. but you definitely know where you are.
But that's fine. It's fine. It's not actually a problem because I expect it.
Yeah.
They allow themselves to show their disgruntlement at having to do some more work. That's fine. I get it because, you know, it's like that is what I do. But when I'm on my own after I've been given a set of notes, it's just they feel sufficiently comfortable with me in order to voice it. But that's fine.
Yeah. Because this is something that we're having to deal with is, you know, being critical of each other's, you know, whilst trying to write something collaboratively, we're having to constantly give each other notes on each other's ideas. And yeah.
I think it's a really healthy process to always feel like you can chip in an idea, and then it's for the writer to decide whether they want to take that idea or not, or ignore it. And I always take that view that if I'm reading a script and I suddenly have an idea, because obviously I'm a writer as well, if I have an idea, I will put it in a script note to say, what about this? And then if they want to take it, they can take it. And if they don't, they don't, because it's their script. Yeah. It's not my script.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, this is obviously all of our script, isn't it? There's quite a lot of negotiation, but it's good. It's good. We haven't really got to the nitty gritty yet, have we?
Today, we haven't really got anywhere, have we? But
well, I would say the very first thing to do is you decide who your hero is and what their want is and what their need is.
Yeah.
Just go right back to the basics.
Yeah.
And then I'm working on something at the moment, and if I say to you, it's a historical comedy, and if I just say to you that's set in the 17th century, and if I say an Englishman discovers that he has got to become the head of the most vicious warring clan in the Highlands,
right,
then you've instantly, you know what that show is, don't you?
Yeah.
You've got, you know, the bewigged dandy. Yeah. Who has suddenly got to become the head of a really violent clan in the Highlands?
Yeah,
and he doesn't.
I told you we should write that. And he doesn't
want to be that, but he is forced to do it. If you have characters that are forced to be in a situation against their will, think Basil Fawlty.
Yeah.
Think Captain Mannering. They're forced to be in a situation. They're all forced to be something they don't want to be.
Mm. Yeah, they all want to leave but just can't get out.
Yeah, so go right back to your main character. And what do they want and why can't they have it? What's stopping them getting it and what's their fatal flaw?
Mm.
So start there. Once you've nailed that, then you start building the world around him or her.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it's really important to work at when you sit down before you even start a script, just sit down and work out the structure of it first, because you will save yourself so much trouble down the line.
Yeah.
So do your scene by scenes, but do them rigorously and put those through an editorial process before you even start. Get your shape right. So you've always got to start with a problem that needs fixing, and then if it's a comedy, it's not going to get fixed. If it's a drama, it will be fixed, or may not be fixed, depending on whatever your character's fatal flaw is.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I can, like, after our talk yesterday, I can think of sort of two or three of our characters who could become the main character. So yeah, I think we need to do a bit more work there, lads, don't we? But
definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, that's good. Add it all to the pot. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the point of this, isn't it? Is that, you know, it might
the whole thing.
Maybe some could say it's a bit stupid to do the whole process sort of live in front of not live, but for other people to see all of our failures.
I would hope that it is a useful process.
Well, we're hoping that it's useful for us and maybe useful for the two or three other people who might listen to this as well. You know, someone might get something out of it.
I remember at your writing workshop, Emma, you suggested writing for kids TV as a brilliant way of kind of honing your writing chops.
Especially if you want...
Especially
if you want to write comedy. Yes, no, I've last year I worked on a show, it's not out yet, for Aardman called Lloyd of the Flies. but that's an animated series that's coming out. Well, I don't know when it's coming out, but it's coming out.
Brilliant.
Yes. Oh, is that, was it a good title? I think
it's one of those where you wonder whether the title came first. It was the stimulus for the idea.
I had an idea for a kid's time travel show called Time Waits for Norman, and I never got any further
that's a very good
title.
That's a great title.
We should work that up one day.
Yeah.
But Emma, as well as being an actor and a writer and a script editor, and of course we haven't even mentioned MasterChef champion and politician, and I found out that you also hold, or at least held, the world record for having the largest kazoo ensemble, which is quite a fact, and writing a million tweets a day. How the hell do you fit it all in?
I have two screens up. I'm just very efficient. And I have...
Can you write with both hands at the same time? Like,
I'm just
two
really
different things?
Fast. I'm really fast at typing. And I have a screen up to my right, which has TweetDeck up on. And then I have my main computer screen where I'm working on. And so it's like Twitter is like my virtual office. So, you know, like, you know, if you're working in an office and someone goes, my God, you're never going to believe what's just happened. And you all sort of poke your head up and you all discuss that for 5 minutes and then you'll all go back to work. That's what Twitter is for me. So it's just like, oh, yes. Yep. Thank you. And then back to work. My timeline is pretty much entirely journalists and other writers who are all on Twitter. You know, it's like we're all in one big virtual office.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. But I, you know, I love it and I hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't have any social media anywhere near me when I'm writing. I'm so easily
distracted. Yeah, I don't mind being distracted because I know I write fast. So, you know, I've never not hit a deadline ever in my life. If anything, I hand things in early.
Yeah.
Which is also bad, I should add.
Why is that?
Well, because you...
Do people give you less time the next time?
Well,
around?
It's just I sort of sometimes think, oh, I've written this pretty quick. I should probably not look at it for a week and then come and then revisit it again. But I always regret doing it. I always just send it off the minute I've sort of finished the first draft. Because I've sort of got an attitude now of get it down, get it done for the first draft, and that the first draft is always going to be a bit rubbish and everyone's going to have thoughts about it. So you may as well take them now.
Yeah.
And then the second draft for me is the one that I really spend the most time on.
Yeah.
First draft is just, as I say, get it down.
That's what we've been learning.
It is. I'm really bad at it, though. I find myself agonizing over words, and I really need to get over that. I need to just... I'm not a quick writer.
Do you know what my best advice for that is? Is just think about your character. Just think about your character and what your character would say in that moment, rather than thinking about, oh, what word does this... Just think about your character and how your character speaks.
Well, you guys got any more questions? I think that sort of wraps it up pretty much, doesn't it?
Yeah, we've taken enough of your time. Thank you so much for joining us and shattering our dreams relatively gently, but in a helpful way.
Well, I genuinely feel that we need to have another meeting quite soon because at the moment I feel quite energised by that. You know, I think we've got a new direction to go in, haven't we? We should definitely not leave it for a few weeks and let it all sort of fade.
That was a good dose of reality.
Yes, absolutely.
It was the medicine kind. Thank you, Emma.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Good luck with the new book when it comes out.
Thank you.
And thank you very much.
Cheers.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So again, thank you to Emma for, as I said, coming on and Shattering Thanks, our dreams. Emma. But there was a lot of interesting stuff in there as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, in between the...
There really was.
In between the dose of realism.
I feel like Dave particularly...
Dave sounds, but you sound very deflated there.
Well, you know.
Yeah, you were really excited a minute ago.
I was up and now I'm down again. So
that's all right. Yeah. We'll pick you
but
back up.
But that's the journey, isn't it, that we're on?
It really
I think Emma was asking questions that we could answer in a week's, 2 weeks' time, I think. And it just kind of...
Yeah, maybe just, to be fair on us, we weren't quite ready for
that. It maybe makes us realise that, yeah, you've got to put in that hard work to, like she was saying, about, you know, you've got to plan everything out and make sure it's all...
Managing expectations, isn't it? I mean, we had literally just finished our first meeting about an idea. To expect it to be good at that point.
But I think there is some learning there for us, is that we have maybe taken a couple of steps too far down the road before solidifying the court. Like, you know, like the...
Yeah,
you know, when she said, and you think, oh, idiots, why have we not done a log line?
Yeah. I can't believe we didn't do a log line before interviewing Emma.
We didn't know she was going to ask that, did we?
For that project, why have we not done a log line? We've talked about it. We know
but
this.
But to be fair, we can't write a log line until we know what it's about, and we haven't actually figured that out.
We've just got
some. That's true. Yeah.
But that is the next step.
But a lot of people have said everything starts with character, and that's what we've done so far, really, isn't it? Is come up with some characters. So, you know...
We just need to sort of figure out who the main one is, I guess.
And work out what they're doing.
But what I did like about what Emma was saying was, or the way she said it to some extent, is she made it all sound very simple, straightforward. Mm. Like,
achievable.
She's very pragmatic, isn't she?
Good word for it. Yeah. Mm. In the way that a good old-fashioned teacher would be, where they're just kind of going, this is... And you feel like... All right, I get that.
It felt a bit like that, didn't it?
It does feel a little bit. That's fine. How you learn, isn't it? That's how you learn.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, in general, food for thought, things we can build on. And
definitely.
Let's get that positive. Well, you know what we need to do? We need to get another writing half day in the diary.
We do.
Yes.
Because I did feel like we actually got somewhere in that. And it was really good putting the time aside separately to do it all together.
Yeah.
I think it worked really well.
Strike whilst the moderately disappointing iron is still
lukewarm.
Yeah, as the saying goes.
That was actually a really timely interview, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think that came at the right time.
That would have been a disaster interview a few weeks down the line, wouldn't it?
I mean, imagine if we'd had that interview like a couple of days before we were about to do the pitch,
with a sitcom in our hands, with a bona fide old-fashioned sitcom in our hands.
No. That's so passé.
But yeah, you know, like I said, like earlier on, this is the whole point of it, isn't it? It might seem foolhardy to put ourselves out there, but we're doing it for other people to learn from our mistakes. You know, this is a very generous thing that we're doing.
Yeah,
getting live.
I hope you're enjoying
feedback.
It.
Yeah, I hope you bloody appreciate this. But you know, it's actually good to have feedback that we can work off. It's, you know, like what Jeremy was saying, wasn't it, in our interview a few weeks ago, about you need to have those moments of breaking it down, because without those we wouldn't be able to put the work in that's required to make it as good as it can be.
That's very true. It is making me realize just how much work is going to have to go into this.
But it's, I mean, you know, it's split but between that, three know, of us, isn't it?
Yeah. So
I'm not afraid of it.
This feels like the point where I normally give up stuff, where it gets a little bit tough and you feel like you have to backtrack and rebuild, knock down what you've already built and build something else up in its place.
Yeah.
That's usually the point where I go,
that didn't work.
It's probably just best if I put that on the back burner and just think about it in my subconscious for the next 12 years.
Well, that's why...
And find a new project to look at.
We're not going to let you do that,
that's
Tommy.
That's why we're doing it together.
No, I think this is why this is going to be really good for me, because that's not an option now, is it?
Afraid not.
Got to keep going.
Little mouse caught in the trap.
Yeah. So we've just got to find out what this comedy is about. That's all we've got to do. It's pretty...
Straightforward, really, isn't it? Well, it shouldn't take long.
Something. It's not a bloody sitcom.
Thanks for listening. Thanks to Emma Kennedy.
Yes.
And be sure to check out her new book.
Yeah, it sounds amazing, actually,
doesn't
it?
Sound good.
Yep.
We'll put a link down here, just there.
No, not there, John. Not there.
Oh, sorry.
Jesus.
Just slightly, just there.
That's it, yeah. And we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
I'm not saying bye this week. Sorry, I felt like you two were waiting for me, but I'm not. I just wasn't doing the vibes.
Didn't have it in you.
No.
Don't people need three people saying that?
I think they'll wonder why you didn't say goodbye.
Do you think, it's a thing? I just didn't want to.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think they've got to come away going.
Tom's a bit off.
I hope Tom's all right.
Yeah.
He didn't say bye to me today.
I hope he's not upset with me.
I'll say bye twice next week.
All right, yeah.
No, I meant to say bye twice.
I mean, it sounds like you were probably writing something else on your other screen whilst chatting to us tonight. I think that's the impression that I get. So,
do you know what? It's funny you say that, but I have done podcasts where I've been writing at the same time as talking.
Well, has anyone checked Twitter to see what she said about us?
Exactly, yeah. What tweets have come out tonight?
Yeah, good point. Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?